Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Thursday, April 25th, 2024. A UK-based watchdog is calling on the government of South Sudan to respect the country's laws.
The international law provides for fair trial. It does not allow the government to detain people arbitrarily for a certain period. And this flows even through the South Sudan Constitution, which gives a timeline.
And a South Sudanese lawyer is threatening to take the government of South Sudan to court.
And that's why we are now writing to the Minister of the Justice and Constitutional Affairs, who will be the respondent representing the government when we file a lawsuit before the Supreme Court of Justice.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A breakdown in the international rule of law is being accelerated through rapid advancement in technology and artificial intelligence, which risks a overcharging of human rights violations. That's according to the new annual report by human rights group Amnesty International. Henry Ridgewell has more from London.
Amnesty International offers a stark warning in its annual report. The international rule-based order is on the brink of collapse.
Perpetrators not only violate international law, but seek to justify those violations in the name of self-defense, national security, or counter-terrorism.
Amnesty highlights the conflict between Israel and Hamas. The Hamas-run health ministry in Gaza says more than 34,000 people have been killed, most of them women and children. The figure, which includes Hamas combatants, cannot be independently verified. Again, Agnes Calamar.
Israel has violated the Geneva Convention on a very large number of occasions, including through the targeted killings of civilians, the destruction of civilian infrastructures, the use of famine as a weapon of war, the collective punishment of Palestinians, the greatest number of journalists killed, the greatest number of humanitarian actors killed.
Israel strongly denies breaking the Geneva Convention or targeting civilians, whom it says Hamas uses as human shields. Israel also denies blocking relief supplies into Gaza, contrary to numerous such accusations from aid groups. Calamar says Israel's allies have failed to stop the bloodshed.
Israel's allies have also protected and shielded Israel, including through the use of veto by the United States at the Security Council.
The U.S. says Israel has a right to defend itself following the October 7th terror attacks by Hamas, which killed more than 1,100 people, with dozens of hostages still held in Gaza. The Amnesty report also highlights widespread human rights abuses and law violations by Russia in its illegal invasion of Ukraine, including the repeated targeting of civilians and infrastructure, which Moscow denies. Again, Agnes Calamar.
We are witnessing a rule-based order on the brink of collapse because the architect of the 1948 system, the architect of that system, are failing it and are failing the people.
Amnesty warns of a disturbing convergence of human rights abuses and technology, including artificial intelligence. Again, Agnes Calamar.
It's a wild west, you know, the field of technology and artificial intelligence right now. It must be regulated.
The Amnesty report highlights a worsening civil conflict in Sudan, which it says has triggered the largest displacement crisis in the world, with more than 8 million people forced to flee. The group also highlights China's role in providing support to Myanmar's military rulers in Myanmar's war on minority groups and crackdown on basic human rights. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News.
Amnesty International researcher for South Sudan is demanding answers from the transitional government of national unity about the former mayor of Juba Town, who was picked by armed men on March 30th near his house in the capital. Shekola Onyala says the continued detention of Callisto Lado Nyigilo is against international law.
Through our investigations, we came across information that indicated that Callisto Lado was actually picked up by uniformed officers, most likely from the NSS, and this is the National Security Service. This is based on reports from the police who told the family Callisto Lado was not in their custody. They directed the family towards the NSS, but they haven't been able to get any positive feedback regarding the whereabouts. Yeah. Of Callisto Lado.
What is your call right now?
Our major call is to the government to immediately release Callisto Lado or promptly charge him with a recognizable offense in accordance with the international law and standards. And we would also wish to urge the government of South Sudan to make public the reasons for his detention, and if at all he's in custody, to release him without delay unless a lawful basis for his detention can be demonstrated. So far, that has not been forthcoming from the government.
Rights groups have been calling on the government of South Sudan to release former mayor of Juba City, Callisto Lado. In the absence of that, they are saying the government is violating international humanitarian law. Which law are we talking about here?
The international law provides for fair trial. It does not allow the government to detain people arbitrarily for a certain period. And this flows even through the South Sudan Constitution, which gives a timeline for when someone can be lawfully detained by the authorities before they are presented in court. And, you know, this also takes us back to one of the issues that we've been pushing for, the amendment of the 2014 NSS Act, which has allowed the NSS agency to operate with impunity, to assume police-like powers, then we want this to be amended so that it can be in line with the Constitution as well as the international law, because at the moment they are operating outside of that framework.
In 2017 or 2016, some critics of the government of South Sudan disappeared from Kenya, and were not known. I'm talking about Samuel Dong and Agri Idri. And later on, the UN panel of experts released a report that two individuals were killed. You are dealing with people have disappeared in their hands before and nothing happened.
This kind of push always helps towards a better state. But I agree with you that the situation in South Sudan is almost getting out of hand. We are now seeing repeated cases of enforced disappearances. Callisto Lado is not the first one. Just last year in October, we had a case of another young man, the executive director of Junubin Chronicles, called BR. He disappeared on 4th October. The family has not been able to trace him. We've had cases of people being renditioned from neighboring countries, from Sudan, from Nairobi. Last year, we also had another case of a gentleman called Maurice Mabior, who was also taken away from Nairobi with the alleged connivance from the Kenyan security agencies. So we are seeing these repeated cases. And the fear we have as human rights agencies is that as we go towards the election period, we fear that this trend is likely to continue. And that's why we are speaking up now to try and arrest the continuation of this pattern by the authorities in South Sudan.
The question that begs an answer here is, in a situation where you are talking to a government that does not listen to its own people and to the cries of the international community, what should be done?
We are urging the international community, we are urging the IGAD, we are urging the African Union, we are urging the Troika, the UK, the US, Norway, to put pressure on the government to ensure that we have limited cases of arbitrary detention, we have an opening up of the civic and political space, we have a free press in South Sudan, and especially as we go into elections, this will be critical for the advancement of the democratic process in December. So if the international community, the regional bodies can intervene, and they do have the power to intervene, I think we will have a positive outcome. Just one thing that I wanted to mention on the case of Callisto Lado, I wanted to just bring this out. I think maybe it has not come out in the media or in the public. We need to remember that we are talking about a human being, a father, who was planning to baptize his two-year-old in a matter of weeks, actually the same week he was picked. Callisto Lado was also still grieving the loss of his son, who died in a road accident in October last year. His children are still asking every single day, where is dad? And there's no one who can answer. His elderly parents, who are now living in the village, are crying every day, nonstop, because their son is gone. He was the main breadwinner for the family.
That's Shikula Onyala, Amnesty International researcher for South Sudan. He spoke with me on Wednesday via WhatsApp from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. The U.S. State Department has issued its 2023 Human Rights Report on the situation in South Sudan. The report stated that nothing has changed in the country. The report further stated the human rights abuses in South Sudan includes arbitrary or extrajudicial killings, forced disappearance, torture allegedly by security forces, opposition forces or armed militia affiliated with the government and the opposition, and in some cases ethnically based groups and individuals who continue to suffer in the hands of armed groups. The report says these individuals who have disappeared or who have been killed have not accounted for. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a South Sudanese lawyer is threatening to take his government to the court over registration charges. Find out how and why after this break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. A lawyer has given 7 days to South Sudan's Ministry of Justice to address a petition by the country's 14 political parties who complained about higher registration and licenses fee. Gabriel Kwart Akok Deng says if the ministry fails to respond within a week, he will open a case against the Transitional Government of National Unity in the East African Court of Justice.
Political Parties Council recently, earlier March 2024, issued a decision charging any political party seeking for the registration to pay $50,000 for the provisional license, which expires for 6 months only, and $25,000 as a full registration license, making a total amount of $75,000. On 25th March 2024, the 14 political parties aspiring for the registration delivered a petition to the political parties rejecting the exorbitant fees imposed by the council.
I would like to know who makes a decision in the political parties council, because it's my understanding that the political parties council is composed of all the members of the political parties in South Sudan. And so one would say the parties are the ones who came up with the fee.
The council is not supposed to be comprised of the members of the political parties, because such a council is supposed to be led by the technocrats, non-partisan technocrats who can make a neutral decision. And that's why now my clients are affected with the decision of the political parties council, simply because it is politically motivated. If you can look at the 14 political parties which rejected the registration fees, include SPLM-IO, NDM, National Democratic Alliance of Dr. Lang, among others. This decision is meant to hinder or to block other upcoming political parties which are competent to compete in the political landscape in the country. And that's why we are now writing to the Minister of the Justice and Constitutional Affairs, who will be the respondent representing the government when we file a lawsuit before the Supreme Court of Justice. After failing to resolve the issue within 7 days, then we are going to submit our statement of reference to the Supreme Court of Justice, because we don't have trust in our legal system in the country.
The chairman of the political council, when asked by the media last time about this registration fee, he said those who fail to comply will not be registered as a political entity in South Sudan. And you are threatening to take the government of South Sudan to the East African Court of Justice, because according to you, the judiciary in South Sudan cannot handle such cases. There appears to be a standoff here.
The way forward is to see justice in before the competent court of law, like the East African Court of Justice, simply because the right to form a political party is guaranteed by our law, which is the Transitional Constitution of the Republic of South Sudan 2011, under Article 25.1. The same applies to the Political Parties Act 2012, first amendment. So it is the right for any group to join together and form a political party. And in a situation where there is an intention to block such practices that promote democracy and rule of law, then that one cannot be compromised, because this amount is nowhere to be found, John Tanza, that a political party can pay $75,000.
It appears like this is going to be another roadblock on the road to peaceful elections, because if political parties are not able to register for elections, then you might end up with one party electing itself.
That is actually the intention, because the incumbent government is fearing political competition, simply because they know that they have nothing to convince the neglected citizens of South Sudan to vote for them once again when there is a political competition between other political parties. So this is the fear of competition, and that one cannot be allowed by law, saying that people can be oppressed. We separated from Sudan simply because of oppression by the Khartoum government regime. So South Sudanese could not be oppressed in the newly independent state. Otherwise, our independence will have no meaning.
There's this case that you have in your hand right now. You have written to the Ministry of Justice requesting for answers, and you have justified your reasons why this fee is very high. In the event that you don't hear from the Ministry of Justice, you are also saying you will be going to another court because you don't trust the court in the country. What if the case is thrown away from the other court?
I don't have opinion now to presume that the case will be thrown out of the court, simply because it's a brilliant court of justice. It's being led by technocrats. They're independent enough, not like South Sudan judiciary. And I am confident that if this case is taken to the Supreme Court of Justice, definitely I'm going to win the case.
That's Kwok Akok Deng, an advocate and legal consultant. He spoke with me from Juba this past hour. The United Nations agencies warned Wednesday that dangerous levels of acute hunger affected some 281.6 million people last year, the fifth year in a row that food insecurity has worsened, heightening growing fears of famine and widespread debt from Gaza to Sudan and beyond. Nabil Biagio has more from Washington.
According to the latest global report on food crises, more than one in five people in 59 countries face acute food insecurity in 2023, compared with around just one in 10 in 48 countries in 2016. Food and Agriculture Organization chief economist Maximo Torero spoke to reporters in New York via video teleconference on Wednesday.
The number that we have right now is 281.6 million people, or 21.5%. of the analyzed population, face highest levels of acute food insecurity in 59 countries or territory. Perhaps an even more compelling statistic than the absolute number is the fact that the reality that for four consecutive years, this prevalence rate has remained stubbornly high, between 21 and 23%, despite record levels of humanitarian funding.
The FAO official said South Sudan and the Palestinian territory of the Gaza Strip are among the worst affected by hunger, currently in a state the UN describes as catastrophic.
705,000 people in five countries were facing catastrophe. This means IPC5. And here it's important to understand that this includes Gaza Strip in Palestine, which just it is 577,000 people. South Sudan, 43,000 people. Burkina Faso, 42,700 people, and Somalia, 40,400 people, and other countries that are in these 705,000 people.
In Sudan, the World Food Program, or WFP, says the year-long conflict between the Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, quote, risks triggering the world's largest hunger crisis. The aid agency estimates that 18 million people face acute hunger in Sudan. Of these, nearly 5 million are in emergency levels of hunger. Sudan also faces the worst displacement crisis in the world, with 8.5 million people having been internally displaced since April 2023, and nearly 2 million who have fled to surrounding nations, mainly Chad and South Sudan. Torero says conflict, climate change, and harsh economic conditions are the main drivers of hunger globally.
The major driver this time is conflict, insecurity, which has the primary driver in 20 countries and territories, with 135 million people facing high levels of acute food insecurity. Weather extremes, which were the main driver for 18 countries and territories, with almost 72 million people facing high levels of food insecurity. And economic shocks, which were the main driver in 21 countries and territories, with over 75 million people facing high levels of acute food insecurity.
The report, a joint initiative involving FAO, WFP, and the UN Children's Fund, or UNICEF, found that although the overall percentage of people defined as dangerously food insecure last year was 1.2% lower than in 2022, the problem has worsened significantly since the COVID-19 crisis. When the coronavirus hit in late 2019, around one in six people in 55 countries faced worrying food insecurity levels, compared with one in five just a year later, the Global Report on Food Crisis says. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
From Washington, we move back to Africa, where the World Health Organization says Africa is the capital city of malaria, accounting for 95% of all global malaria deaths every year. And as the international community marks World Malaria Day today, the World Health Organization says people living in poverty and with less access to education in rural areas are the most affected in Africa. Maureen Odhiambo reports.
The World Health Organization estimates that 4 out of 5 malaria-related deaths in Africa are children under the age of 5 years. These deaths occur because of inequalities in accessing healthcare and a lack of financial resources. Children under the age of 5 from poor households in sub-Saharan Africa are 5 times more likely to be infected with the disease. The African Leaders Malaria Alliance, ALMA, says the fight against malaria in the region is hindered by a lot of challenges, among them resistance to drugs and insecticides and the intensifying effects of the climate crisis. Anton Okara, is the special ambassador at African Leaders Malaria Alliance.
The World Malaria Day calls our attention to some of the bottlenecks we collectively face as a continent in our fight against malaria. Key among them, lack of access to essential malaria services, disproportionately affecting vulnerable groups like children under 5 and pregnant women. Climate change and humanitarian crises exacerbate these challenges, necessitating efforts to break the cycle of malaria transmission. In echoing the recent Yaounde Declaration, let us accelerate our efforts to reduce malaria mortality and ensure no one succumbs to this preventable disease.
With this year's theme for World Malaria Day being accelerating the fight against malaria for a more equitable world, African leaders have pledged to enhance their leadership and increase domestic financing for malaria control programs. The commitment includes investment in data technology, adoption of the latest technical guidelines for malaria control and elimination, and strengthening malaria control efforts across all countries. Okara says Africa is struggling to end malaria because the continent depends solely on global funding to fight the disease.
We're reminded that Africa is at the center of a perfect storm that threatens to disrupt essential life-saving malaria services. These critical financial shortfalls of malaria programs are linked to the ongoing global financial crisis, the impact of climate change, insecticide and drug resistance, humanitarian crisis, which need to be addressed urgently to prevent malaria upsurges. As a result, the continent is off track to meet its bold and ambitious target to end malaria.
In Africa, only 3 countries, Cape Verde, Algeria, and Mauritius, have been certified to be malaria-free by the World Health Organization. Meanwhile, Nigeria, Democratic Republic of Congo, Uganda, and Mozambique account for over half of all worldwide deaths from the disease. Kenya Medical Research Institute researcher Mata Maya says the fight against malaria has stalled due to insecticide resistance and that the new vector control inventions are needed.
We're trying to control malaria using a new way. So far we've been mainly using insecticide-based interventions through bed nets and IRS. And unfortunately, these have been great. There's been a lot of progress due to these interventions. But unfortunately, in some areas, mosquitoes are changing their behavior. They're biting earlier in the evening or early in the morning or outdoors. And so they don't provide complete protection.
World Malaria Day aims to raise awareness on the global efforts to control and eliminate malaria. African countries began commemorating the day a year after the landmark Abuja Declaration in 2000, which saw 44 malaria endemic countries signing the agreement during the African Summit on Malaria. According to WHO, in 2022, there were at least 249 million malaria cases and 608,000 malaria deaths in 85 countries. Reporting for VOA Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in San Francisco.
That report by Maureen Ojiambo brings us to the end of our show for this Thursday, April 25th, 2024. We now leave you with Sauti Sol and the song Nambe. Listening to Sauti Sol and the song Nambe. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Shadrach We wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Mani subire, subire ku wina.